are Locked On Big 12, your daily podcast on the Big 12 Conference, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everybody. Josh Neighbors here for the Locked On Big 12 podcast on this Wednesday, March 24th, 2021. Today's show is a conversation between Corbett Koslak and myself about what went wrong for the Big 12. We do talk about Baylor, what went right, but mostly what went wrong for the Big 12 in the 2021 NCAA tournament. We recorded this conversation on early Tuesday morning, late Monday night once all the games were over. So just letting you guys know, disclaimer there, but still, all this stuff very relevant as we head in later to the week this week. Well, it started off pretty well, and then things got bad in a hurry. Josh Neighbors here. Joining me is Corbett Koslak. I mean, Corbett, I was feeling myself on, I guess, was it Friday night, right? The Big 12 goes 6-1. They were 6-0 at one point. And I think the Texas game should have been a harbinger of things to come because it was a bloody Sunday. And then, I will say this. Oklahoma and a losing effort was very good. But besides that, like, holy hell, that was a bad two-day stretch for the Big 12.
Well, I think I said, I know I said this on one of the pre-tournament podcasts we did, and we did about four of them in the week leading up to the tournament, that it is a known thing over the last 25 years that what you do in your conference tournament says absolutely nothing in relation to what you do in the NCAA tournament. And it's hard to look at that through an unfoggy lens when you watch how good Texas is and how good Oklahoma State is in the conference tournament. And you're like, yeah, well, you know, it's different this year. It wasn't. Texas goes down to Abilene Christian. The numbers play themselves out. What an embarrassing performance for Oklahoma State to end the season. It was a downhill slide. And I mean, the good thing is they got a 50-50 shot to win the national championship right now. So that's still in play, but as far as, you know, how good the conference is outside of Baylor, kind of the Big 10 and the Big 12 suffering the same fate. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that we thought these teams that were battle tested, right, that these teams that had it all together during the season, would manifest itself. And it did for the first round. Let's start with Texas because that's where it really began for the Big 12. Well, I watched UCLA today dismantle Abilene Christian. And to me, Corbett, a lot of it felt like athleticism was a big part of it. Texas is like 20 times more athletic. And here's the problem is that all I heard all week from all these writers that were talking about is how pesky Abilene Christian is. Matt Coleman's a guy that I believe is one of the best closers in college basketball. He was miserable. He had a miserable game. Jericho Sims, they did not get him the ball enough. Look, I'm not here to say Shaka Smart should be fired. I actually don't think he should be fired. I know a lot of people do. I don't. I'm not one of those people. But he did a really poor coaching job in this game, I thought.
Yeah, the 14 seeds were interesting this whole tournament. You look at Eastern Washington, they gave Kansas all they wanted and more. The same thing with Colgate, who were up 14 in the first half at one point against Arkansas. Morehead State and West Virginia were tied with like 8 minutes to go. And then the upset, actually, Abilene Christian. Anytime a team is as good at one thing as Abilene Christian is at defense and then gets about a dozen miraculous 360 off-the-glass layups to go in, shoots 29% from the field and wins. Like, statistically.
And it should have been worse than that.
Worse. They shot 29%. They shot 50% on contested layups at the rim, ridiculous shots. Like they open shots, they shot maybe 10% from the field. And that manifested today in the UCLA game when they couldn't buy an open bucket. They went 9 minutes without scoring today against UCLA in the first half. I like talk about laying an egg. I mean, now there's no other way to put it. And then Andrew Jones hits – you know, maybe what could have been, had they made this long tournament run, one of the biggest shots in Texas basketball history. And then they get fouled. And the guy who's a 59% free throw shooter.
The foul call?
He smacked down on his arm. It's a foul every time.
I know it's a foul.
That's one of those. It's just the way the cookie crumbles, the way the ball bounced. There's nothing you can really do about it. It's just you can't be in that position if you're Texas. You are on every level better than Abilene Christian. And the biggest problem, too, and I know I texted you this about this for the Texas basketball program, knowing the way Texas operates as a state, the biggest deal is the fact that it was another in-state school. So you have all those Texas fans that are going to be – well, I mean, you're not even the best team in the state of Texas because, you know, Texas has, it was its own country for like 9 years, and they still act like they are a lot of the time. So it's – I mean – It's that's madness for you. People who love March Madness, it comes with the territory.
Want to let you all know that today's show is brought to you by RockAuto.com.
Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody. They're always reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest possible price rather than charging prices based off what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require account login or membership. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us?" box so they know what we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
So we're kind of going in chronological order from when things went wrong for the Big 12. And, this bears mentioning a game that did go right. Baylor is back, and I know we said it once, but Baylor's back in a meaningful way. That game against Wisconsin was really important, and we had today on Big 12 Today at SiriusXM had Matthew Meyer on, and he talked about the Oklahoma State game being really important for them because he said the practices we had this week, he said we had some practices, and I love hearing that, right? Also, we have to consider, you know, I actually didn't even think about this. They had one practice from the end of the COVID pause until the end of the Big 12 tournament. They got knocked out because they were playing so many games they had to preserve themselves. And obviously, like, when it comes to form, I think playing the games is not as important as practice because you can run, you can do shit like, you know, what running wind sprints in practice, right? Which is what this team needed to do, obviously tempering it. But I thought it was clear against Wisconsin. They figured a lot of stuff out. Also, Wisconsin had a little run, but Baylor just started scoring at will, and I thought they did a good job putting that game away.
What we saw in that game, which we didn't see in Wisconsin, North Carolina, and which we didn't see at the end of the season for Baylor, is we saw what Baylor should look like and what Wisconsin should look like, right? Wisconsin made every possible shot known to man against North Carolina. Brad Davison was acting like Michael Jordan out there. Then they get to Baylor and he misses like at a usual clip. He shoots.
And they did a good job.
They shot their percentage, basically. Wisconsin shot their percentage.
And I thought Baylor did a good job on defense as well.
Yeah, and Baylor did a good job on defense. That was pre-COVID Baylor that showed up in that game against Wisconsin, especially in the first half. You know, and you don't want to boil it down to one moment, but the three going into the locker room to going up 13 as opposed to 10, right after Wisconsin hits a three to make it 10, is like the Baylor that you saw that was like showed no mercy for the first, you know, 3 months, 4 months of the season, absolutely no mercy, was absolutely slaughtering opponents pre-COVID. That was the Baylor team that has like this edge to them. You tweeted numerous times about how Matthew Meyer never, ever passes the ball. He shoots every time he touches it.
Which I like.
That's when Baylor's offense is working at peak efficiency.
Yep.
So that's what happened. And he knocks down threes. It's like, you know, David Mitchell dribbles up. Meyer's over there on the left wing, kicks it over to him into the three every time. And it goes in about half the time.
Well, also, his shot fakes are perfect, too, because the defense thinks he's shooting, right? So his shot fakes are money. Now, I do want to ask you, what was more impressive – the one-handed jam by Mark Vidal off the alley-oop, or the fact that Meyer passed?
Both of them seem Mark Vidal was one of those guys. Like, this in science class. It's like elephants are the only mammals that can't jump. Well, you know, I've seen Mark Vidal, right? So, like, you know, that he's one of those guys. And, yeah, the one-handed slush. What the most interesting stat, like if you're going to look at the roster, is the fact that Matthew Meyer is like the second tallest player on Baylor's roster, despite never, ever wanting anything to do with the paint. All around nice play. And the kind of thing that, like, he's such a peripheral player that, like, his name doesn't get brought up immediately, but Jonathan Chamwa-Chachua played excellently against Wisconsin. He got his flow going. They had multiple alley-oop dunks. Whoever the color commentator was in that game was, you know, nobody keeps this stat, but I think Baylor leads the country in lob passes, and they did it the entire game, and they were just peak efficiency for Baylor on offense in that game against Wisconsin.
Yeah, and you get 16 from Jared Butler. It's six. I mean, Davion I thought Davion, when he pulled all the right strings, man, it's so impressive to see.
Are you getting excited for the Davion Mitchell Max Asemus matchup in the Elite Eight?
is that not money? Could that not be a money matchup? But here's what I will say: his hands are so active. Like, I feel like a lot of we had four TV timeouts that were caused by Davion Mitchell poking the ball free in the perimeter, and so he's just so active. 6-for-8 in this game, Corbett. I mean, 6-for-8, 16 points, 8 assists. He's firing all cylinders, so he's doing well.
Another note about that Baylor game too: the fact that it was a standalone game, the second game of the day, right in the afternoon. It kind of like it let everyone watch Baylor, and that's good and bad. I mean, these kids are sitting in their hotel room with literally nothing to do. All of their opponents, you know, probably watching every game of the tournament religiously, just like the rest of us. And they're watching Baylor do that. Like, I don't know how much, you know, if Arkansas does beat Oral Roberts, which, you know, no 15's ever been to the Elite Eight. So let's say that happens. Arkansas is going to have seen, you know, what they did, whether they were in person or like Baylor putting that on film can do you no wrong. And that was just excellent for Baylor.
All right, let's move on to a game where I thought there was more poor coaching. West Virginia falls to Syracuse. And here's my qualm. 75-72, Buddy Boeheim, you can do the whole thing. So you called this one. You did think it was going to be a bit more of a trouncing than it was. Here's my problem is that didn't West Virginia figured it out, right, at one point in the game on offense? They did. This is not rocket science, guys. It's not. It's three on the perimeter. It's a guy in the high post. It's a guy running the baseline, all right? And you have to move the ball quickly, and you cannot be afraid to shoot. When Sean McNeil started shooting and making shots, what happens to that defense? It doesn't look like a zone anymore because the guy gets pulled out. You have to make them respect your ability to shoot. You have to move the ball around quickly, and you have to, you know, and look, you're going to miss some shots, and you might turn the ball over a couple times. But make that defense move. Make them work. Holding onto the ball and ball faking for an entry pass and then, like, kind of holding the ball again, not going to work. Also, stop taking the elbow jump shot. That's what they want you to take. Emmett Matthews in this game took, like, 4 of them, 5 of them. They were bad shots. Only guy I want there shooting that shot is McBride. And honestly, I'm actually more of a fan of putting a guard at that high – I mean, this is coaching philosophy. But like, they look so unprepared, Corbett. They look so unprepared. And the fact that game was close, it took the lead in the second half, like, that should have been them the whole game. It was so frustrating.
The zone, to me, is basketball calculus. Jim Boeheim, in this instance, would be the guy who invented calculus. And the kids on the team that had one day to prepare would be like, you handed them a study guide and said, you know, take your SAT tomorrow. Here's your study guide. You know nothing. Figure it out in one day and come be the inventor of the mathematics. It's very easy for us to sit here and say
it's not though.
It's
not.
They do the same thing every year.
That's what I'm saying. Also, somebody scouted them, the staff too. Like, it's been scouted. This if you were to pick a team to beat a zone, would you not pick West Virginia? I'd pick Baylor, but still, would you not pick a team like West Virginia?
Here's the thing, though. It is very easy for guys like us to sit on our couch and be like, this is how you beat a zone. This is what
it's not, though, because we've seen people do it.
Well, I haven't even gotten to the second part of my point yet. This is the third time in 5 years Syracuse has gone from a double-digit seed to being in the Sweet 16. They do this consistently. If it were that easy to beat, teams would beat it.
It's also these kids have so much confidence that they're
it is the weather of basketball. Everyone talks about in football, you know, that's the snow game is the ultimate talent equalizer. No matter how good one team is or how good another team is, you're never going to see a line bigger than the field goal in a snow game because it's impossible to handicap. When the zone, West Virginia can have 3 times the talent. And it does not matter because in their head, they cannot get through whatever it is. There's a mental handicap that has to be taken into account with the zone. And honestly, I tweeted it twice and during both Syracuse games. I don't understand why more teams don't run zone defense because Syracuse consistently takes their best player, Buddy Boeheim, is it a 3-star recruit, and B, goes there because he's the coach's kid. And just took them to the Sweet 16 when they shouldn't. This is your favorite thing, too. I know I got for reference to everyone listening, I met Josh freshman year at KCOU. One of the first conversations we ever had was about that Syracuse team that went to the Final Four with Michael Benajay, and your whole thing was,
so just bad. Because
what you do in the tournament does not validate getting in. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the same story here. And it
one quadrant.
I agree with you on a basis one, argument.
One quadrant one victory.
But here they are.
One quadrant. You know,
don't take notes now, but I think they have a very, very favorable matchup in a team that is not a great outside shooting team in the Sweet 16.
I agree.
And then they're going to get – I mean, their path to the Final Four is as easy as anyone else's. Loyola, obviously, an excellent program. But, their zone ruins everything. And Syracuse could easily be playing Baylor, like you said.
I don't know if I want to watch Loyola versus Syracuse if that game happens. That's going to be, like, one of the worst basketball games ever.
It'll be one of the best coach teams against one of the best systems. So Porter Moser should
coaching. Yeah, guys, that guy knows
the basketball. The San Antonio Spurs.
I don't know about that, but yeah, he's been coaching Indiana Hoosiers probably is the right place to do. Let's move on to Arkansas and Texas Tech. Look, Arkansas is the better team, 100%. Do you agree with that statement?
I did. I mean, I liked Arkansas. I had them going to the Final Four in a couple brackets. Yes, I liked Arkansas the entire time. I think they were better than Texas Tech.
I thought Texas Tech fought their tails off against a better team that was playing better. I think you and I had identified that this Chris Beard group, you know, it's tough to bet against the tournament. They did a really good job against Utah State. I thought that this game, and they had a shot at the very end of the game. It's tough to see them winning this game. It was really tough.
Well, there was a couple, and we'll get to them. Obviously, we already got to one of them. Losses that make people question the state of their program. This wasn't one of those.
No.
First of all, I thought very clearly Texas Tech had a large coaching advantage, and we've seen it before in the tournament. They do every tournament game that Chris Beard ever coaches. They have a large coaching advantage, and we saw it when Arkansas went from up 13 to up 1 in about 90 seconds with 2 minutes to go in the game. And was just turning the ball over on offense, all haywire, not holding onto the ball, which obviously not a great thing, like we saw with the Rutgers game. But they were shooting 18-foot jump shots with 6 seconds into the shot clock and allowing Texas Tech to get back in the game. But the same problem that plagued Texas Tech all year, the lack of a shot creator that consistently made shots or got shots for teammates wasn't there. Arkansas's talent disparity overcame the coaching disadvantage.
I think a guy, and I know that these guys are hard to find, but Carleek Jones, right? A Devon Dotson. I know they're hard to find, but now in the transfer portal especially, I thought Gabe Iger made a great point today on Big 12 today. He said that they've got to find some guys who can just flat out score. And the problem for Mac is Mac's a volume shooter. He's not a volume scorer. And they, for long stretches of games in the back end of the season, let's be honest, they were a better defensive team without him. And offensively, they were fine. I mean, he grabs you some tough buckets. That's true. But defensively, you are giving something up there. And so I think the key for him is if you're going to give up something defensively with a player, it better be you better be worth it, right? Go ahead.
Here's the thing, too. Mac McClung, now I don't think he can win, Big 12 Most Improved or whatever. I don't know if that's an actual award they're giving out, but Most McCormick Improved Player. What?
Dave McCormick.
Going into next year, I meant.
Yeah.
I don't know if he can win Most Improved Player next year because a lot of people think he's already really good. I mean, he is, on the grand scheme of college basketball, a good college basketball player.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that. There are a lot of areas in his game that we see other players improve a ton year to year in doing. 3-point shooting, a lot of players are up their 3-point percentage by 10% year over year just by volume shooting in the offseason. Shot creation, knowing when to pass the ball as opposed to just trying to create off the dribble. He shot 37% from the field this season. It can't get worse than that at point guard. So if he should be able to get a lot better and be that guy for them next year. He couldn't be that guy for them this year, but if things go right in the offseason, there is potential there with his athletic ability and the coach that he's going to have around him for this next offseason to get to that level.
They need a point guard, and they got to play him off the ball more. That's kind of – I don't think he should be handling the basketball because he's not a great passer. So I think he's – especially with athleticism too, he's more suited for an off-ball role.
So he's that's kind of like 6 foot in heels, though. So that's a little bit of an issue.
He's, but your athleticism can make up for more than that, especially if you move well.
But all right, let's move on. Running a point guard out there on defense, and you're going to have two guys that size that could be defensive problems for Texas.
The guy can't pass. He's a lot. I mean, once again, so it's you know, if you're one of the two guards,
yes,
yeah, you're picking your own poison there. You're going to roll there.
One more quick pause in the action today. Let you guys know today's show is brought to you by BetOnline.ag. You guys know the deal. Football season's over, but college hoops, NBA, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality television. Real-time updated odds and props for almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head over to the website or use your mobile device, sign up today, and receive your 50% welcome bonus with the promo code LOCKEDON. That's LOCKEDON, Locked On, at betonline.ag. Once again, sign up. If you guys deposit $100, you guys use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get another 50 to play with. So whatever you guys deposit, 50% more will be added to your account. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Today's show is also brought to you by the best tasting protein bar out there right now. That is Built Bar. Guys, go to bar_built on Twitter and you guys get to vote for your favorite Built Bar today. You got that fun bracket set up there. Once again, at bar_built, and check back each day to see who is winning. And when you guys go to builtbar.com, you can buy their Built Go, Built Boost, and all of those things. You guys use that promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED 15. Once again, LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off on your next order at BuiltBar.com.
Okay, one more game from the Sunday slate we got to take care of is Oklahoma State and Oregon State. Oregon State was the better team that night. I don't know if that'd be true. If these teams played seven times, I don't think that would necessarily be true. But they were the better team. Cade Cunningham did not play great. We had the honor and pleasure of watching him play this year in college, Corbett, and paying really close attention to him. It ended pretty tough for him and this team. And they pushed and they fought back and they – what was it? They were down two, I think, at one point in this game, one or two, but not able to cross that threshold. And I think Oregon State deserves credit. It's kind of where I'm at. They outplayed them. I mean – it wasn't like Oklahoma State was doing a lot of stuff that I thought, you know, I think they got outworked a little bit. I thought they were sloppier than Oregon State was. I thought Oregon State was very well balanced.
What's so weird for me is Oregon State is one of those teams I didn't see a lot of this season. I saw a ton of them the last 2 years, though. They're a little bit different. They lost their all-time winning scorer, Tress Tinkle, to the G League. That's the Wayne Tinkle's son, the coach. They had the NCAA leading shot blocker each of the last two seasons, and Kyler Kelly, he moved on. I think he's playing overseas now. So they're a lot smaller now than they have been. They're not as good. They were dead in the water, you know, 11 days ago before they were 300-1 pre-tournament to win the Pac-12 tournament, go on and win it. And then here they are in the Sweet 16 with a matchup with an 8 seed to potentially go to the Elite Eight. The difference in this game was free throw shooting. I know we talk about the whole game. I mean, this team shot a combined 73 free throws. 16 of Oregon State's 35 were shot by Ethan Thompson, and he was 15 of 16. They shot 91% as a team from the line. He took just 11 shots from the field and managed 26 points to lead the game in scoring.
Yeah.
Cade Cunningham on the other end took 20 shots 20. From the field and managed just 20. You
know, and I need to clarify something. Kind of they did not play a cleaner game. Oregon State was not the cleaner team. They were the more aggressive team. The rebounding margin, plus 20 in that department. Even though Oregon State handed them extra possessions with 20 turnovers, the big difference was they created more opportunities for themselves with the offensive boards. Yeah, Oklahoma State shot the ball 14 more times, but with, you know, those offensive rebounds, just rebounds in general, they're able to stop Oklahoma State possessions, and they're able to, you know, create a couple extra opportunities for themselves. So, and once again, Ethan Thompson was tremendous. And the fact that they've got a guy who's played that many basketball games for them, that just can't be quantified.
Yeah, I think he's got some – he's like approaching their all. I think Gary Payton is the all-time assist leader in Oregon State basketball history. And I think Ethan Thompson's approaching it. He's approaching some sort of records, like games played. He's been there forever. He was actually played with his brother his first 2 years at Oregon State, who has since moved on, Stevie Thompson. But Oregon State also in this game, you mentioned the rebounding differential. What's interesting is that Warith Alatish plays the four for Oregon State in the starting lineup, just 6'7". So this isn't one of those teams. Obviously, Silva is, you know, a big dude, 7'1", 265 inside. But outside of him, there is no size on this Oregon State team. You wouldn't think one guy would be, you know, the difference in 20 rebounds. Alatish at 6'7", grabbed 12 rebounds against Oklahoma State. Their leading rebounder had just 8 rebounds, and it was Keelan Boone in 23 minutes off the bench. They really – I mean, that just comes down to effort. I mean, at that point, I know a lot of times it comes to balls bouncing, but
– they got outworked.
If Oklahoma State would have played Illinois and they got out-rebounded by 20, yes, because Illinois has a ridiculous amount of size inside. That's not the case here. And it's really interesting to see a team like Oregon State, who outside of Silva is smaller, really, than Oklahoma State in, you know, pretty much every area. Ethan Thompson's obviously really long, but he's not exactly, you know, an inside-the-paint rebounder. All around, from getting to the line nonstop, this Oregon State team is just playing absolutely excellent basketball. And although, I mean, it's going to be a super fun game for them in the Sweet 16 on Saturday.
Yeah, I don't love their chances in that game. But let's move on to today. And we had two more Big 12 teams get knocked out. The first of which, I have to say, I mean, as far as 16-point losses go, Corbett, Oklahoma's against Gonzaga was a pretty good one. So they fell behind. You know, they actually got off to a good start. Fell behind. Austin Reeves was absolutely tremendous in this game. And look, they cut that lead to 8 with about 4 minutes left. I mean, they made that thing. It was a game. And a couple foul calls didn't go their way, and they would not have decided the game. They were not the better team. But I will say this. You could tell, like, you know, for as many coaching snafus as we had this weekend, I think, in the Big 12, you could once again understand why Lon Kruger's taken so many teams to the Final Four, right? Like, this group was – they were prepared. They were well coached. They took a bunch of best shots from Gonzaga, and they cut an 18-point lead to an 8-point lead. And even though Drew Timmy was going off, and they really didn't have an answer for that, and they weren't, I think Oklahoma fans should be really proud of the effort they put forward today.
Yeah, one of the takes that has been common among, you know, those college basketball fans that tune in for March is that, you know, this Gonzaga team is like every Gonzaga team in the fact that they're going to find a way to lose and not win a national championship. I need the people listening to this podcast, which is probably mostly Baylor fans. I don't know how many fans have teams lose and then, you know, immediately tune in to hear about it. But if Gonzaga does not play Baylor in this tournament, there is a good chance this is the closest game they play all tournament. That's how good this Gonzaga team is. They are going to beat Creighton by 25 in the next round. The USC team that showed up today would be awfully fun to watch, but this Gonzaga team is absolutely excellent. Oklahoma played really good defense, and Gonzaga scored 87 points. Like, that's how good Gonzaga is. They have, like, their five starters are all going to probably at one point be playing on an NBA roster in the future. This Gonzaga team, they only really go six deep. But the five they put on the floor for most of the game are absolutely outstanding. There is no weak spot. They are the best team in the country by a good margin. Oklahoma shot 5 of 16 from three and stayed in the game almost the entire way in the absence of their second leading scorer. Alondez Williams off the bench played absolutely excellent. There were numerous times in the first half especially where the shot clock would get inside 4 or 5 seconds. And then Oklahoma would find a bucket. They mentioned it over and over again on the broadcast. It kept happening. That's what kept Oklahoma in the game. They led throughout the first half. It was a good game, but at the end of the day, Gonzaga is just so much better than everybody else.
Yeah. And once again, like, I've been really critical of Austin Reeves. He had a lot of the shots he had to hit today to make the game a close game. All right, last game of the day, and this one just wrapped up. And, I mean, USC beat the brakes off of Kansas. 85-31. This was a bad matchup for Kansas from the start. This is one that I identified pretty easily that I thought USC would win. And that is because, you know, no matter how good the credentials that Kansas has, no matter how good the tournament credentials KU has, Corbett, the issue here is that this is a awful matchup. The length of the athleticism that USC brings to the table is going to give a lot of teams fits. Specifically, a team like Kansas, especially, you know, with Dave McCormick still getting used to being back, and then also Joe Wilson flying in today. One thing I do want to say, and you and I can talk more about it this week, but this was probably Marcus Garrett's last game. Maybe come back if he wanted to. But Marcus Garrett did say this after the game. This comes from Scott Chasen. He said, Bill Self changed my life. I'm going to be the first person in my family to graduate in May, and Bill Self taught me everything. You hate to see, like, that's the sad part of the tournament, right? You know, we saw Luka Garza today, you know, not getting closer to what they wanted to do. And a guy like Marcus Garrett, who, I mean, Bill Self has been pretty honest about him being one of his favorite players that he's ever coached. I think he actually said he's my favorite player I ever coached. Sucks to see him go out like that. And this Kansas team, you and I think you and I knew it from the beginning. They had a ceiling. And once COVID hit, that was kind of writing on the wall for them, because this team was an uphill climb from the beginning in the tournament when they played elite teams. And today was just not going to go their way.
I'll start here. When I was filling out, you know, my bracket, I put USC in the Elite Eight almost immediately out of the bottom half of that region. And I strongly considered, you know, they're going to give Gonzaga a game. That's how good I think USC is. I think when Isaiah Mobley, not Evan Mobley, but when Isaiah Mobley is on the floor, that USC team is absolutely different. Evan Mobley is going to be a top three pick. But when Isaiah Mobley is on the floor, you saw it in the Drake game. You saw it today. He led them in scoring. He is the engine that drives the car, the straw that stirs the drink. They are excellent. As far as Kansas goes, we talked about it at length pre-tournament. It was a bad matchup. David McCormick has to run the offense for Kansas. Not only did he only score 5 points today, he only got up 4 shots. And it was a big-time struggle for Kansas on offense. Marcus Garrett made every shot known to man down the stretch against Eastern Washington, which he'll always have that game because he carried them, put him on his back. He got him to this game. 6 for 15, Oshai Agbaji, 3 for 13 from the field. They shot 29% as a team, 24% from three. Meanwhile, USC shot 57% as a team and 61% from three. Just like, you're not going to overcome a 37 percentage point differential in 3-point shooting and a 28% percentage point differential in shooting from the field. The second leading scorer for Kansas, Oshai Agbaji, had 8 points. USC had 6 guys score more than 8 points. That kind of just, you know, highlights the 34-point win for USC. They are peaking at the right time. Kansas, they just did not have the shot creators and the shot makers they needed all season. This is, like you said, I think one of Bill Self's better coaching jobs, because they really improved over the course of the season. Did not think they'd get to a 3-line. They did do that. But at the end of the day, USC was just, I mean, head and shoulders, you know, pillar to post, so much better than Kansas.
Yeah, pillar to post. I mean, that's just the right way to say it there, because they're a more athletic team. And look, I'm excited to see them move on in the tournament. You and I will do more of an autopsy on all these teams, not to be morbid, but, you know, I think that's kind of what it deserves in this Big 12 season coming up here in the week, and just kind of what it means, you know, moving forward for a lot of these teams. But, I mean, bloody Sunday / bloody Monday, right? That's what it was. We lost how many teams yesterday? Was it 5 yesterday? Four yesterday and 2 today. And the only bright spot was Baylor, as it should have been.
Yeah, and I mentioned this pre-podcast. The writing on the wall for the Big 12 as a conference, which obviously the other 9 fan bases I grew up as a Notre Dame fan, so I've never understood rooting for a conference. It doesn't make any sense to me. But I'm assuming the other 9 fan bases don't really care how the Big 12 does as a whole. But for the Big 12 commissioner, for those who care about the Big 12 as a conference, there's a 50-50 shot they win.
Me?
National, yeah, you especially.
I have no dog in this. I have zero dog. Like, well,
there is a 50-50 shot that Baylor wins the national championship. It's going to be them, Gonzaga. The line's going to be 1 either way. The biggest thing that's happened for Baylor so far in this tournament is the fact that Illinois lost to Loyola Chicago. Because I love Loyola Chicago. The way they played, first of all, they look like a top five team in the country. I think actually right now they have the third best odds to win the national championship at most Las Vegas sportsbooks, which why wouldn't they after they look like that against Illinois? But matchup-wise, I love Baylor, the way they pressure the ball on defense. I'm expecting them to get to that point. I love Baylor no matter who comes out of whoever they end up playing on their route to the national championship game. And then they're going to end up playing Gonzaga. So as far as the Big 12 goes, obviously we knew how good Baylor was all season. I expect them to be there with Gonzaga. And I think that's pretty much, you know, the story of the Big 12. We thought the rest of the Big 12 was really good. They were most of the regular season. Same story with the Big 10. And the Pac-12, who everyone thought was awful, has a Pac-12 on Pac-12 matchup in the Sweet 16.
I don't know if it's awful. We just didn't watch. Because it was on so late. Not watching it.
I mean, yeah, well, in Arizona had like they have the self-imposed restrictions to miss the tournament. I did not see this coming out of UCLA. Now, I did take UCLA to beat Michigan State, and they caught a break with Abilene Christian, but UCLA kind of coming out of nowhere. They've been a letdown team. Mick Cronin, maybe great coaching job, but it's just love March. Although I will say these upsets have created some not-so-fun matchups to promote. For next Saturday on the right side of the bracket with Syracuse, Houston, Oregon State, Loyola, Oral Roberts, Arkansas, and then Villanova, Baylor. But just love March Madness, and it didn't work out with the Big 12 this year, but as my bracket will tell you, there's always next year.
Yeah, and you and I will do a deeper dive later on this week. We can dive into what else happened outside the Big 12 conference. But that'll do it for today. Corbett, always appreciate your time. Make sure you guys follow the podcast at LO Big 12. Follow me at Josh Neighbors _. And Corbett, where can they follow you?
At Corbett _Koslack.
All right, good stuff, Corbett, here late on a Tuesday morning. This will go up on as Tuesday's show, or excuse me. What day is it today? I don't even know what day it is.
Today is Monday. Yeah, I said
it's
Monday.
It was Monday, I'm so disoriented now. So this will go up as Wednesday's show as we head towards later in the week. But good stuff, Corbett.
All right, thanks for having me on.
All right, that will do it for today's show. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at LOBig12. Follow me at Josh Neighbors _. And until next time, my friends, please stay safe.